Hello, EGP learners. Gosh, isn't it stressful at the moment? You know, Gandhi and I have been talking about so much stuff over the past few weeks, months, and feels like years. And now we've got the potential for GP imposition of the new contract, potential industrial action. There's the workforce crisis morphing into the employment and funding crisis. There's so much going on that it can be difficult to keep your mental health in check and look after yourself. So Gandhi and I, in this episode, are going to have a check-in with each other and talk about how we try and keep our mental health and stress levels under control. Let's tech enhance your primary care and learning. And hello there, Gandhi. How are you feeling?
Ticking on. It's been, like you say, a stressful few weeks, not just from the national picture, but definitely locally and stuff. So really interested to see how this episode goes, because we've just got a really brief template what we're going to go through, but this is going to be a bit rawer, I think, from our perspective, isn't it, Andy?
Yeah. And, you know, I do sometimes worry about how you're doing. You know, there's all this news that we're exposed to through doing EGP learning, which, you know, can actually get your tension levels up, you know. Mm-hmm. And we've just been recording our episode, last week's news episode, and there was more news about strikes and, you know, potential for strikes and all sorts of negativity. And, you know, it can affect you. And then, of course, we're both GP partners and have other roles, mm-hmm. and there's stress that comes from doing that as well, which are, you know, can be quite big at times, and then there's general life stress. So interested to get through this, really. So how are we going to kick this off, Gandhi?
So we're going to talk about just briefly some of the challenges. We're then going to talk about some of the tips that we've come across, both for managing the information that you get, then talking about practice-based stuff, some tips on how to challenge and tackle some of that, and simply put, signposting to other things that you probably need to be aware of if you're not already and things. I guess starting off talking about the challenge of the problem, it's definitely growing. We know that burnout within our profession is significantly increasing. I mean, interestingly, and we didn't talk about this earlier, I remember an article just came out yesterday, 7 out of 10 GP trainees are suffering with burnout.
I saw the same one.
Yeah, there we go. And I've definitely seen that in practice. Almost all of my trainees, in fact, I correct that, all of my trainees are less than full-time working now, which if you go back 5-10 years, that was almost not heard of. And a lot of them cite well-being as the reason for doing so. That's the key thing they put in. So I think it is a growing issue, not just within our newer GPs, but actually within our existing ones. You and I regularly talk about the things that we go through and hear about it from other people as well. So it's an issue, that's for sure. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I first graduated, people talked about burnout and so forth and how we might address it and reduce it. And it just seems to have got worse since then. So I think this is a really, really big problem, within the profession, probably in other areas of life as well, but that's where we've got the most exposure to. So I am keen to try and be potentially a little bit more positive today and perhaps talk about what we do ourselves that kind of we think helps at least and keeps us up and running and ticking along. I think the first thing we were going to look at was managing information intake, because we've just both sort of talked about actually through doing EGP learning we're exposed to a lot of the headlines and things on social media as well, and it can all get quite demoralizing. You're more active on the social media side of things than I am, Gandhi. How do you find it affecting you, and what do you do to try and help?
I think part of it for me personally is recognizing that there's always two sides to a story, first of all. And you mentioned it there, it's about the headlines. The headlines often don't give you the full picture. So recognizing that just reacting to the headlines is never a great place to stay. I think there is also looking at the sources. That's probably the biggest thing. So when you see those kind of things that give you that emotive response, where is that coming from? Who's actually the author of that comment or that post or that article itself? Because often that will give you a telling tale as to what may be triggered by your response and that kind of thing. You mentioned it on social media, things have become more interesting. We know that X or Twitter, whichever one you want to call it, seems to be a little bit more antagonistic, toxic, war garden, whatever you want to say and stuff in recent times. I still enjoy going on there. It's my best source of information personally, because it's live and it's current and things. But I can absolutely appreciate many people are leaving the platform because they find it so much more challenging to manage the feeds compared to other places who don't have the same algorithms and that kind of stuff. So many people have shifted over to Threads or to Blue Sky or other kind of platforms for that reason. I think when it comes to general practice, it's also where do you get your information from? I guess I'll give you, we didn't talk about this, but WhatsApp is probably a big one, isn't it? Loads of people get
private networks are sort of taking over from social networks in many areas. Yeah,
definitely. And it's because it's a way of marshalling people, it's a way of direct communication. You don't have to deal with algorithms and all that kind of stuff. But actually, it also gives you a breadth of understanding of what people are thinking. So I'm part of groups, loads of groups. Too many groups, being honest. And it's how do you manage the information flow from that? So I use a lot of features like muting groups. I dip in, I dip out, recognizing that everybody's not probably at the same level you may be. So you and I talk about this stuff almost constantly. You know, we know a lot of the stuff pretty much as soon as it's happened. Recognizing other people aren't in that same place. And therefore, you know, I've had to stop myself a few times and say, how on earth could you not know about this? I've known about this for weeks, you know? Yeah. And then people just simply asking a question and I'm like, hold on a second. They're not in the same place as me. You know, they're not going to have that knowledge. They've got other things to focus on. So just, recognizing that information sources and the places that that information is coming to and how it will be different for every person involved.
Yeah. I mean, a tip that I would give is just think about places that can curate your information sources for you. So this is just taking some learning from my exposure to the general news, because I always used to listen to Radio 4 and, you know, the Today program in the morning and, you know, things like that. And, you know, not necessarily read the newspapers, but look at newspaper headlines. And I don't really do that anymore. I have a few podcasts that I like to listen to. I think everyone loves The Rest Is Politics, right? You know, with Rory Stewart and Alistair.
Yeah, you got me started on that.
Yeah, you know, and actually I find I can know what's going on, you know, in the world of politics and news without having to expose myself to the headlines or the news channels or Sky News, which I used to watch anymore. And I'm probably happier, really, and I find them a more friendly place to be kept up to date from. There's a few other podcasts that I listen to, which sort of, I guess we can sort of plug EGP Learning a little bit. You know, hopefully we're not too toxic in how we convey information about what's happening in general practice. But think about, you know, just getting your information in, you know, a weekly dose from a curated news source. If you're finding that it's getting a bit toxic, there's something about keeping on top of the news yourself if that's what you want to do, but you can get news other ways, you know. So that's something that I've learned from my life outside of medicine.
Absolutely agree with that. I mean, I think it's the lens that those places place on the information they put. So obviously, you know, when we talk about general practice news, you've got your Pulse Todays, you've got your GP Online. I know some people go to places like the Daily Fail for their, you know, news updates on health and things, but they have a much more right-wing news lens compared to, I guess, you know, other places. And even us, you know, me and you are going to be biased. We're both GP partners. We're both, you know, looking at things from that perspective, which is why we do say to people, if you've got another opinion, let us know down in the comments and that kind of stuff, and feel free to do that today. But absolutely, you know, we're here to help give you some of that information. If we're the right lens for you, keep watching, because we've got some more stuff coming up.
So the next thing we were going to talk about was creating a positive work environment. I guess we'll get to our personal things a little bit later. But particularly, I guess we're, you know, you're a PCN clinical director, you know, I'm a GP partner. You know, we do have some influence on the places in which we work. And I guess everyone does, even if you're not in a position of sort of traditional influence, you can still influence the workplace. So there's things that you can do to keep the culture right at work. Where would you start in thinking about this, Gandhi?
For me, it's always going to come down to communication. And you can never communicate enough. So try and be open and transparent with people within your organizations. Have mechanisms that work for each individual, for them to speak up about what they're feeling, but also communicating both ways, so both up and down within your practice or your network, because it is important. If you're not talking, things fester, they become a bigger problem. And actually, that's when people really struggle and things. So, you know, and we talked about multi-channel communication, how important that can be, because not everybody will do things the same way, which is more effort, but it can be much more rewarding, in my view, from that perspective and things.
Yeah. Another thing that we've do a little bit more that I've actually seen done in other groups outside of medicine is sort of checking in, because a lot of groups, a lot of meetings can feel a bit like, you know, there's the bosses or the people that speak a lot and they tell other people what's happening or what to do. And actually just sort of said, actually, we'll do a check-in today. How are people feeling? You know, and just give everyone a little bit of space to say something about how they are. That's actually quite powerful. And, you know, even I do a lot of speaking in the meetings, but actually think, if I'm asked, how are you in a meeting? I think, wow, that's actually really nice. Even though it can feel a little bit fluffy. I think things like that actually work and actually help create that environment where people can talk to one another. We've had a few people shout at each other in meetings in the surgery, Gandhi, in the last few weeks. And then make up afterwards, you know, so they've had kind of, you know, one-to-one conversations made up or even made up within the meeting or apologized. I think it just speaks to the level of tension that just seems to be around at the moment.
Definitely agree with that. I think it's about conflict, isn't it? And having healthy conflict, not unhealthy conflict. I know Rachel Morris talks about that loads, who's joining us for PCM Plus. But yeah, definitely check out her stuff on You're Not a Frog, sorry. I think other things, trying to be productive, but not focusing just purely on productivity as the only way to go, because people then focus on the output rather than the work it takes to get to the output. We talk about productivity all the time, but actually, you know, how do you make that effective? And I guess the one thing I've learned, and I've learned from you a little bit as well on this, is when you're doing that deeper stuff, that really heavy, juicy stuff, make sure you've got dedicated time for doing it. Not trying to squidge in with everything else, because that's when you get stressed and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to talk about deep work. That's one of the books I've read recently, Cal Newport. And when I say read, I mean I listen to it on Audible, as I do with most of the books that I read.
Productivity there.
With my air quotes. And that really focuses on, there are certain tasks that I think make you feel better when you get them kind of done and out of the way, and certain things that are different to day-to-day work. So I guess in practice, a good example of this is actually we spend a lot of our time seeing the patients, filing letters, filing pathology results, actioning things. And that's the day-to-day grind. But actually there might be some deeper work where actually you need to set aside, you know, a morning, you know, actually get alert if you're a partner, you know, actually make sure that your work is covered, backfill yourself, and actually sit and think about actually how could this system in the practice be better, because that would actually make things better for a lot of the people, and actually that'd be really good time invested. But so that's what I would call, you know, deep work, you know, and actually you need a few hours not to be interrupted to actually get that done and get to the bottom of it. It might take more than a day, you know, it might take a longer period of time. But that sort of stuff actually really changes things in the long term. So actually just make sure that you make space for that deeper work that actually makes a difference and actually makes you feel a lot more satisfied when you do it. So
I'm going to chuck into that as well. Make it as fun as you can. I'm going to give you an example because I just did this last week. So we've got, like many practice, challenges of estates. So we're running out of space in the practice, no rooms. And I basically realized that we had to fix this. So I got one of my administrators with me, and we were like, we're going to clear the whole afternoon. We're going to sort this out. I made it into a board game, because in my head, as Andy knows, I love my board games. So it was an area control kind of thing, people's names, map, had to sort it out. We got it done in an hour and a half rather than the whole afternoon, because we just made it so that it was easier for us both to understand. And actually, it was sorted. So sometimes that deeper work can become much more natural if you make it fun.
Yeah, you're right. And you can kind of cultivate that sense of fun in all sorts of areas at work. And I guess we're sort of straying into...
Yeah,
or feel more like personal productivity or personal well-being practices now. And I'm just sort of throwing one, which I think sounds really obvious, but it can sometimes be difficult to get yourself to do it. And that's actually kind of stop working from time to time, you know, which might be breaks in the day, or, you know, it might be actually just getting a control on the time that you leave work. And I know everybody will be screaming at us saying, but there's work that needs to be done. You know, it's difficult. Mm. And, you know, I'm still frequently stood in someone's living room at 7:30 in the evening, a late home visit. You just think, gosh, how's it come to this? You know? Yeah. That's not every day, you know, and actually, if you really focus on it, it is often possible, not every day, but some days, to get away at a much better time. And I always find actually that, you know, those last 1 or 2 hours that take you from an 8 hour day to a 9 or 10 or 11 hour day, cost to your life and your well-being is incredible.
Yeah.
Really just being just knowing that and just trying to avoid working too long and too hard, because you're not productive the next day, you know. Easier said than done, but just really try and get strategies in place to do that.
Okay. So shall we talk a little bit more about the personal stuff then?
Yeah, go for it.
I think there's various different things you can look at. What I would say, this does need to be personal. It needs to be unique to you. Loads of people talk about, you know, absolutely exercise, but what kind of exercise works for you? You know, so it could be running, it could be swimming, it could be group sports, real power with social activities and that kind of stuff. It could be meditation, it could be yoga, it could just be powerlifting in your clinic room. powerlifting, yeah. So I've got one of those kettlebells in my room. I started realizing that I'm crap at remembering to do stuff, and I'm an awful winter runner, which is actually the thing I love to do. So, you know, I've got a kettlebell. I just do a few squats and things like that when I've got some 5 minutes, and actually it's really rejuvenates me.
Do that on camera, Gannett. You could be the Joe Wicks of general practice workouts and stream those.
We'll see and stuff. But you know, it's things like that. It's adapting the workspace to look after your own well-being. You know, I've always talked about things like standing desks, you know, good posture. Those kind of ergonomics makes a huge difference in your well-being. Everyone knows my hate for the Dell keyboard. You know, have a nice keyboard and stuff. It makes your day nicer.
It's always covered with everyone else's coffee as well. It's
exactly sticky. Yeah, so yeah. You know,
certain typos, I can tell which keyboard I've been at by the pattern of typos in my in my notes, because certain keys don't work on one of the keyboards. You're right there, Gandhi. I think there's something about just being reflective about what kind of restores you, what are your restorative activities, because I've tried things that meditation doesn't do very much for me. I think maybe I'm just not very good at it.
Yeah,
but that's something that people recommend that doesn't really work that well for me. I love running, you know, that I really, really like that. So that works really well for me. And I know that I'll feel better after I've made time and gone for a run. So I think it's about working, you know, what works for you. And I think, and also you're right, we're kind of quite privileged in terms of we have a kind of private space, our consulting room at work, most of us, most of the time. I've thought about taking the yoga mat in, and I might actually do that. Good tips to think about what you can do in the in the consulting room within the day in terms of
again activity. Personalize it to you. You know, I pray at work, so I do the namaz prayers and stuff and things, you know. It's the culture you develop and things, and making sure that other people feel that they can, you know, look after themselves in suitable ways as well. Also important to avoid the things that make it worse, so you know, toxic things that aggravate how you feel, try and limit those as much as you can at work. I've gone through phases where I've had to, you know, actually de-link my Gmail account from work, so I don't keep focusing on YouTube and stuff whilst I'm at work when I'm meant to be doing other things. You know, it's just those other kind of things that come into play.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I guess for some people, this might be cigarettes, alcohol, you know, drugs, other substances. For me, it tends to be watching rubbish on Netflix and eating too much like cake and things. And it makes me feel really bad when I consume those negative things. So just you know, try and do it less. I suppose the last thing to talk about is probably... you know, it would be irresponsible of us to do something like this, I guess, without talking about, you know, if things actually genuinely get too much and you think you need some, you know, real help. You know, and sometimes it comes to that. I know I've used the Looking After You 2 coaching support that you can get through NHS England. Just search for that. I don't know whether it's being commissioned past April, actually, but that has been really good for accessing, you know, coaches, not just if you're struggling, but also if you're like, sort of, I don't know quite where I'm heading, you know, with my career, things like that. They're really, really useful, I guess. And the other sort of main one to talk about is practitioner health, which hopefully we'll put the link at the bottom. And that's if you're having sort of mental health or physical health issues as a health professional that you want help with. And that's a confidential service. People sometimes worry about accessing other local GP surgeries where they're registered because they might know you locally, because we're part of that community, aren't we? So people can worry about that and sometimes feel they need something that's got a little bit more distance, and practitioner health is really good for that. And they're very focused on providing support for providers of healthcare. So that's a really good source of support.
Definitely. I'd also recommend, you know, contacting your local LMC. A lot of LMCs have created systems and things that are you know, more regional. I know in Nottingham, we've got the GPS service, which is a great service locally. So it's kind of like a mentoring, well-being, kind of a more local version of the practitioner health, I think. But, you know, it's important to have those. And also don't forget your unofficial support networks, you know, your friends, your family, your partners, the people in your practice. Talk to them about how you're feeling. That doesn't mean you broadcast it and tell everybody, but, you know, you will have those people around you that you can talk to. I know for me, and I've said it multiple times, for me, you know, Andy hears so much of the crud I go through. You know, we have whenever we go live, we have a bit of a kind of venting
therapy session,
therapy session and stuff and things. And it's having those people in your life that can help you just, and even sometimes just call you out on stuff and say, yeah, you need to stop doing that. Which we did this morning, didn't we? So there we go.
That brings us nicely to a close, really. Mm-hmm. So I just like, for me, I think after listening to this, it would be great if people were just, you know, reflected on this topic and maybe thought about things that they can do going forward. You know, maybe write them down and make yourself just a little bit of a plan, mm-hmm. so you don't forget what you're going to do to try and improve your mental and potentially physical health going forwards and stay sane in a difficult world.
Definitely. And if you want to check out how to navigate that information feed a bit better, Andy and I did do an episode on that a while back. So check it out, coming up right here. And as always, we'll catch you on the next episode. See you later.
Oh, hello there, EGP learner. I'm Dr. Gandalf, and I often get asked, what kind of resources do you have to try and help those using EMIS? Because you tend to do a lot more stuff for System 1. And often I've really struggled to answer that question because, let's be honest, I don't use EMIS on a regular basis. So therefore, trying to help EMIS users is a little bit more difficult for myself. And that really made me feel, well, not great. So I kind of did something to try and help all those EMIS users out there. I went and had a chat with one of my colleagues, Dr. Mike from GP on the Move, and him and I have created a course that you can use to help you use EMIS so much better. That's right. If you use EMIS, but you want to use it so much better, so much quicker, and in such a way that means you go home sooner, then check out our EMIS for Clinicians course. It's an online course that takes you through all the tips and tricks that Dr. Mike knows to try and basically mean you can go home quicker. That'd be a cool thing, wouldn't it? And guess what? It's currently on offer. So if you want to take advantage of this introductory offer and get access to it now, look at the links down below and check it out. Additionally, if you're a practice, network, or wide area that wants more opportunity to use it, send me an email, egplearning@gmail.com. Let's see if we can help you out. And as I like to say, tech enhance your primary care and learning. Shall we get back to it? Oh, and if you wanted one for System 1 users, well, you know I've got you covered, haven't I? Check out the Learn System 1 for Clinicians course, bit.ly/TPP S1 course.